Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
June 19th, 2015, you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Oh, it's our 10th anniversary show.
Wow. You know, and I didn't even look up what the 10th anniversary gift is. Is it wood or plastic or a bullet?
Scott, for 10 years, you've always given me wood. Oh, wait, are we going blue on this show today?
Apparently we are. Apparently we are.
Everybody wanted us to go blue for the one episode because we're always so clean. I wanted to do it, too. But yeah, you're not going to let me.
Sounds like you're going blue balls, buddy.
Scott says we should go turquoise, maybe. We'll go go off-shade blue or something.
Well, let's kick this party off. The hotline's ringing. Let's see who's calling us.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, I just want to congratulate Chris and Scott for making it to 10 years. I'm not sure if it's possible for you guys to go another 10, but I am sure I'm not the only fan hoping you guys do. Until next time, I am Malcolm O'Malley saying thanks for the first 10 years, and here's to many more to come. I hope to see you on the felt.
Oh, you know, I don't know if I can even last 10 more shows, never mind another 10 years. It's crazy.
God, 10 years. Can you imagine how many new hips we're going to have by then?
New hips. You know, I do feel like age is really catching up with me lately. I don't know what it is. It's really bizarre. You sit there and you're like, is that really a pain there? Do I really have a pain there?
I have a simple explanation for this, my good friend. We're old.
We're old. I know. We are old. This is crazy.
You know, anytime I go to the doctor and I'm like, you know, I don't want to make a big deal about this, doc, but just in case it's like, you know, brain cancer, you know. I got this, like, you know, whatever here, and he's like, I know what that is, Scott. I'm like, you do? He's like, yes, you're old.
And you're old.
Every year he says that to
me. You're abusing your body. You're old. And I don't feel old. When I went back to Connecticut recently in February, I got together with a bunch of old friends old as in I've been friends with for a long time.
You went down to the Senior Citizen Center?
Yeah, and it felt so good to see them, and the reason why is because they're like, wow, Florida must be the fountain of youth. You look exactly the same. I haven't seen you in 20 years. And I'm like, thanks, man. And you look like hell. So, yeah, another 10 years. We'll see. I don't know. Actually, we went for our morning walk today. Jeannie and I were talking about the 10th anniversary show today. And then I said, we have to do another one. And she goes, why are you doing two shows? And I said, well, I'm not going to be here next week. We're going to be on vacation. And she said, well, why aren't you doing like you did last year? And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you know, those five shows, a binge thing? And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, but what do we tell the listeners? Like, okay, let this year vote on the five worst episodes that you want to hear.
We probably get a lot more response for that one.
Yeah, you know, and then, I mean, it's every year we're going to get this vacation thing going, so we're going to have to figure something out. And I'm like, but this year I think Scott and I are going to be sort of available, so we can still do the shows during our layoff. But, yeah, five worst shows, five shows that had guests you liked, five shows you guests you hated. I mean, I don't know. I guess we could probably go a few years with
maybe
binge, but
yeah, we could probably phone it in for 3 or 4 years, but 10 years.
10 years, that's 50 episodes. You're going to start catching up with all the episodes.
I got to tell you, these next 10 years are going to be twice as hard as the first 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
The first 10 years were not easy at all.
Oh, piece of cake. They breeze. You know, and the other day I wanted to add it up and I didn't. I hope somebody listening might want to do this, but on iTunes, you have if you have like podcasts or if you have like music, Actually, I think it's just the music. I'm not sure if it's for the podcast too, but if you have, like, say, 1,000 songs that are dedicated just to, you know, Rush or Led Zeppelin or something, at the bottom it tells you, yeah, just a random band that I never even heard of. At the bottom it tells you how much time all these songs add up to.
So what you're saying is people could add up how much of their lives they've wasted listening to
us. Exactly. Like, if there's 500 episodes and we average an hour for each episode, that's 500 hours. You know what I mean? So, I mean, basically, if there were 25 hours in a day, you know what I mean, you're looking at, like, 20 days of your life or whatever the hell it is. I mean, it's crazy to think about how
that's
much...
Like a, that's like a treatment program, isn't it?
20 days? Yeah. I think about it. I mean, really,
we'll you could literally... We'll get you shirt off, Poker. You just listen nonstop to us.
You could literally start on, like, February 1st, and on February 28th, you could listen to this show and never go to sleep. You know?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they'd go to sleep quite a lot in it.
During it, yeah, you might nod off during it.
Fast is back on, awesome. We got to wake up for this.
As our good friend Janice reminds us every time we see her or talk to her on the phone, that she listens to us to go to sleep at night over the past 10 years. So
you got to have something to hang your hat on, and I'll take what we're getting.
So what are we going to do with the show today? I'm sure everyone's just dying to know.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing. We spent a lot of time thinking about this, and we got some good suggestions from our listeners. And, you know, it occurred to me at some point that 10 years is a long time. Now, if we're going to Blue, I would say a long time, but I'm not. I'm going to, of course. A long time, right?
Yeah.
And I started thinking about not just how much our lives have changed, and they have changed dramatically in 10 years, right?
Right.
But how much poker has changed. Poker has changed considerably in these last 10 years, which, you know, I guess it's not all that rare, because 10 years is a long time for anything, right?
Right.
But so when I was talking about it, I'm like, it might be kind of cool because we've already done a lot of the stories that we're going to rehash on the show today. And, you know, I don't want to bore people that have heard those stories 18 times. And some of our listeners just joined us recently and don't really give up about those stories anyhow, right? So, you know, what if we kind of like tie our 10-year journey into a 10-year journey of poker as well, too. So, you know, it's a reflective show, so our fans that are looking for to be reminded of all the cool things that we've done in the last 10 years will be happy, and people that don't really know us that well and just want to hear a poker show today, well, I think they might be interested as well, too, as we talk about poker the last 10 years. What do you say?
I think that's a good idea. I think enough has happened on both sides of that coin that warrants us sort of reflecting on all of it, and it should be kind of cool. Quick story. When I was like, I got to college early. I got out of high school at 17, and I was pretty young.
Parents kick you out, yeah?
No. But I had a favorite professor who was going for tenure, and you're saying tenure, and you keep saying it. And I remember he said it to me over the phone. He's like, "Hey, I want you to write a letter of recommendation for me because you're one of my favorite students." Blah blah blah. And I was like, "Okay, for what?" He said, "Well, I'm going for tenure," and I'm like, "Okay." So I write the letter, and I write, "He deserves tenure instead of tenure." I'm like, because I never heard of that term before. I was only like 19.
Probably really going to help his case for tenure.
So I think
students can't even spell.
I think he threw my letter out. And it was my journalism professor, so I'm only more embarrassed by that. But you know, I just had to throw that story in there. I figured it's hilarious.
Oh man.
But we started the show in 2005, and of course, every good show starts with the question, "What the?" is a podcast. I'll never forget that day too. The young up and coming internet sort of web guy who joins the team, Adrian, joins the TBT team when I'm up there. You're not even really into. You got a little gambling column, right? But you didn't work for TBT. You're still down in business.
Gambling column at that point.
Yeah, you might have even been doing that. That's right. So, but you and I were playing poker together, and he's like, "You guys, we gotta spice up the web." And we're like, "How?" And he's like, "We gotta do a podcast." And every one of us in that room looked at each other like, "What?" And I'm like, "Pod? Like the pod people? Like, what do you mean? We're going to dress up like aliens? What are you talking about?
We got the EPs for lunch?"
Yeah, I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And then we find out what a podcast is. And it was inauspicious, I'd say, at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, and you know, you called me up and were like, "Hey, you want to do a poker podcast with me?" And you had the benefit of having 5-minute head start on me, and
get and then was incredulous when you didn't know
what
one was.
I'm like, "Oh, what's a podcast? Oh, come on, everybody knows what a podcast is."
It reminds me of the episode of when the Family Guy does the spoof on Star Wars. And like Luke Skywalker all of a sudden is just ticked off at Han Solo because he doesn't believe in the Force. And Han's like, oh, you mean that thing you just found out about 10 minutes ago that now you're willing to die for? That's me talking to you about a podcast. I'm like, come on, Scott, get with it. You're so old. But, you know, they come and they say, hey, we got this little digital recording Marantz box, and we hook up some mics to it, and you guys just talk about poker. We're like, what? All right, well, what do you think, Scott? And Scott's like, yeah, I'm all for it. And they sit us in the break room. It's not even a room. It's like a wing of the top floor of the Times building where there's just a bunch of old 1970s furniture and creaky chairs. It probably is still there. I guarantee it's still there. And then, like, the first microwave ever invented that Barney Rubble used to heat up, you know, Dino after he killed him for barking too late one night. You know, that thing is sitting behind Scott, and people are coming over with their Lean Cuisines and dinging up the entire show. Of course, the show is only, what, 6 minutes long?
4 minutes, 5 seconds. I had to look that up.
Oh, man.
Now, I don't know if it actually took us about 97 minutes because...
I mean, let's do it over and over.
Yeah, let's do a different take. We got done, and we're like, yes, awesome, that's a take. You know, like Ron Burgundy.
Yeah,
walk
yeah.
Walk it up.
Yeah.
And like, nope, sit down. All right, and do it again. One more time with energy.
What's really sad is the final product was the best thing that we did. Can you imagine if the lost archives of the Antioch PokerCast show one were existing somewhere? People would kill us if they heard. They would never listen to us if they heard that show.
I'm actually surprised they actually listened to us with the show we did.
I know. It's crazy.
I mean, that was the thing was, you know, when I didn't know what a podcast was, and I'm like, all right, we talk about poker for 4 minutes, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Then I'm like, who the is going to listen to this?
Like, explain
I really
this
didn't
to me.
Understand it, right?
I know.
And then all of a sudden, we were getting emails. I'm like, oh my gosh, people are listening to this, and for some reason, they like us.
And it wasn't even like from like, you know, Tampa or from right. Sarasota or Clearwater. It was, you know, Denmark, you know, and Australia and Italy. I'm like, what the? This is bizarre. And then when you start, then you start to really understand the reach the internet has. You need to call it the World Wide Web, and you know, you get the web and everything. But still, just the fact that you put this little MP3 on your website, now you've got guys from Italy saying, "Hey, you guys are doing a good job. Keep it up, and you should do this." And it was just it inspired us really. It changed our lives forever.
Yeah, that's truly where I realized how little I knew about the internet.
Yeah.
How big it was. I'm like, there are people out there using this for things that I have never dreamed of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad they found this. So, yeah, I mean, it really was, you know, I did a Facebook post on my personal page on Monday, the actual anniversary. And that's literally what I said, that, you know, 10 years ago today, my life changed forever. And I had no idea at the time.
Yeah, there's just
really
no way.
No idea.
No idea. I mean... It was and we'll talk about a lot of this stuff, but even as the years progressed, we were like, there's got to be something we can do with this. There's got to be a way to do this, to change it. And we were trying to make it change our lives.
That's right. Eventually,
you know, and eventually
well,
we
decided our lives needed to change.
Yeah, then it changed. But, and you know, the thing about that show was we came up with a topic, which was kind of cool because... Otherwise, it would have just been totally unbelievably unlistenable.
Oh,
and
gosh,
and the topic was, had poker plateaued? And this is 2005, 10 years ago.
Right.
And we said, no way, right? I think that's...
Yeah, this was a couple of years after Moneymaker won the World Series in 2003. And, you know, every show on TV was poker-related somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it had cooled off a little bit. So that was our topic for the very first show.
Yep.
And if folks want to listen to it, they can go back all the way to episode one somewhere and suck it through it. But
yeah,
we put it in like seven other shows along the last 520, right? So we're not going to subject it to it again. But yeah, that was the talk, and that's funny. And so, you know, at the end of this show, I think we're going to revisit that.
Yeah, I think that's smart.
And see now, 10 years later, whether poker has now plateaued, because we said back then it hadn't.
So. Right. Very good.
All right, well then, 2006, we move on, and the elevator dings replaced microwave dings as we move to at least an office now. And just around the corner, we're actually like, you know, hey, you know, we've got some listeners now, you know.
Yeah, we demand an office with a view.
We're kind of somebodies now, so, you know, can you take us away from the Lean Cuisine headquarters, please? So we did that, but we couldn't get away from the dings because it was right outside the elevator.
The back elevator from the old building.
And really, I think I've taken that elevator twice in the entire time I worked at the Times because it scared the living out of me. Wasn't it the scariest elevator you've ever been in your life?
I took that elevator every single day.
Oh, man.
Because when I worked in sports, that was in the sports department when you opened the doors. It was right there. So I used to always take that elevator every day. And yeah, it was scary. There were times where you didn't know it was going to make it. Like, I never took it to the 8th floor, though, too. I mean, I took it to...
Well, that's true, yeah.
You know what I mean? But if I had to take it to the 8th floor, yeah, I might not have done it. And you know what I liked the most about it was the buttons were heat-censored, so you didn't have to touch them. You could just get...
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, you could just go up to them and breathe on the floor you wanted, and it would light up the number, and you'd go... It was hilarious. We used to do it all the time after dinner. We'd go up to it and go, like that, on the buttons, and it would light it up.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, I was always surprised when we're doing the show, and all of a sudden, ding!
Yeah, what is that?
And I'm like, how many people take this death trap on a daily basis? It really wasn't that much more convenient than the real normal serviced elevators at the front of the building.
Yeah, but see, you were in news, so you worked right there. But for me, I have to walk through the newsroom and see a bunch of you hacks.
Hey, I would rather walk through a garden of hacks than spend my last breath in an elevator.
Your last breath, get it? Pushing the button with your last breath.
Come on, floor one.
Oh, man. But you know what I loved most about that office was... the commercial we did it like the Office.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Remember? Yes. And you and I had to decide who was doing the opening of the show. We had the space shuttle cards that you could see from the space shuttle.
Yes.
I remember that commercial. That was fun. That's got to be somewhere. We could probably still find that somewhere. And that was hilarious. We had the green felt like unraveled on the desk. It was that cheap felt and some chips and. Oh man, you're walking by and you're like, "Giddy up, baby!" Then I do the loser side and. It was funny because I hadn't even seen The Office show yet. But they're like, do it like The Office. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So I had to like fake like what The Office was when we were doing that promo, you know?
Wow, that's crazy to think The Office was on back 9 years ago. Too.
Yeah.
It was. Wow.
Yeah. And it was still kind of in its early stages, too.
Yeah. Well, that's back when we had our first pros. And I think you – was Caleb our first pro or was
I think – I think Jennifer Harmon was our first pro.
Actually, I know Andy was before.
Or was it Andy? It was either Andy or... And then we got Kenna.
Because I remember I sent an email to Andy. He was writing about something or other, and I just sent him an email. And I'm like, hey, we're doing a show thinking he would just ignore us, because at that point I thought all pros were untouchable, unreachable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't until 10 years later I realized I was right, but back then I sent him an email, and he wrote back, yeah, I'd love to be on the show. I'm like, oh my gosh! This is the guy that was on Poker, whatever that Poker United Showdown. I don't even know what show it was that he used to be on down at the Plaza. Remember?
Right.
And I'm like, hey, we got a pro guest. And then emboldened by that, I know you sent an email to Jennifer Harmon, and she said, yeah, I'd love to. I'm like, wow, this is easy.
All right. Well, now that we're talking, I've got the show up.
We just now started talking.
I got the poker casts up from the Times. First thing is, episode one was 7 minutes long. It was a little less than seven minutes. So I don't know where you looked it up, but that's that. So I'm trying to find the first guest. I'm scrolling through. There's Pod Odds. For those who want to know, it's October 5th, 2005. So we mangled that. It was coming up a little bit after that, so we had Vera Filippelli on the show from Derby Lane, but she was our first guest other than Faso. Come on, I got to find it while we're doing the show here. This is so it looks like it was Cowboy Kenneth James.
Okay, yeah. For some reason, I was thinking he was the first guest. So
yeah, I think it's Cowboy Kenneth James, but
because our friend Big Dave.
Yeah, Big Dave hooked us up with
him. Hooked us up with that one, right?
Yep.
And then the first one that we got on our own.
Right? Yeah, Andy Block, and then Jennifer Harmon.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. That's how it went. So yeah, Jennifer Harmon was May 3rd, 2006, and Block was March 22nd, 2006. So
yeah.
And then, what'd you say, Andy, or Kenneth James, was February 15th, 2006. So that was a big month right there. That was pretty wild.
Yeah, we were rolling with the guests back then.
Rolling with the homies. But yeah, and that was crazy. And we had to go outside for that too. Remember, we had to go to the.
Oh, that's right.
We didn't do it at the times because we had to go to the radio station.
We had to find some place where we could actually phone in and record. And use a phone because we didn't have that technology at that point. Yeah.
So Tommy was our guy down there. He called himself Tommy Hilfiger
at
the Bone, and we went down there. And then Orlando came in a couple of times and hung out with us. He's a big,
cool
around
dude.
Here, he was a big, cool dude, a big famous DJ around here. Still is, I guess.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't listen to the radio. But,
And we were like hanging out with them, and they were so gracious. They're like, yeah, come on down, use our studio. I'm like, really? We went down there like 5, 6, 7 times.
Yeah.
Before we hooked up with WDAE later on in their career. But
Tommy was great. That's right. I totally forgot about that part. Yeah.
I remember, Kenneth James was funny because he's accused me of, you know, he's like, who the hell has a bankroll that they can? And I'm like, I do. And he was busting my chops. Andy Block gave us a great tip about Stud. It was something about if you're bored, if you can't beat their board now at this street, you know, don't draw at the end or something. It was a real good tip. But I can't remember what it was now. But I mean, I've worked it into my game.
Years ago.
Yeah, but I've worked it into my game. And the other thing was Jennifer Harmon and her dogs. That was the thing that I remember most.
The dogs, right? Where she has like 100 of them.
So. Yeah. But they wouldn't stop. And she kept apologizing for them. Like, no, it's great. You know, this makes it real. You know, we're all right with that. So. But that's when the show started to take shape, really.
Yeah, and then we actually got away from just the one topic and talking about it and started actually doing a list of topics. And I don't know if it was that year, but eventually we started to go into the studio, or the studio, or the room, the whatever it was.
Or the office,
yeah. What do you want to talk about today? We'd have 3 or 4 things, right? And we'd number them in order. We're like, all
right,
cool.
Yeah, that's right. You'd come up with a bunch of printed out sheets from things that happened. I'd have mine, and we'd put a big 1 on them and 2, and these are the ones we'd grab. And we'd officially call it banter, I think, around that time, too.
Yes.
And, of course, Fasso would bust our chops about that.
And, of course, you know, Fasso and I were crisscrossing the country back then, and which was with some of the more fun stuff I think we had on the show, you know, crossing the border into Canada. Green tea ice cream in California, and you know, I think our Mississippi trip was actually before the show, but I had a lot of fun traveling with him. He's a fun travel guy.
Those were easily my favorite shows too, by the way, with Fasten
on,
and you guys,
you know,
went away.
Get back stories, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Because anybody, there's no, even if you travel by yourself, you come back with travel stories, because travel is just so weird.
Yeah, it's unexpected.
Right? Yep. And then you take somebody else with you, and you know stuff's going to happen. And then if you take somebody like Fasso with you, then it's just, you know, busting your balls the entire time. And I was talking about that because my wife and I's 15th wedding anniversary is coming up next month. And not that we're dying to go to Niagara Falls, but it just kind of works out where we're the rest of our trip. So we're actually going to spend it in Niagara Falls. And I swore to her, she's like, oh, I've never been. And I'm like, yes, you've been. We were there together. And she's like, no, I've never been to Niagara Falls. Maybe as a kid, but definitely not with you. I'm like, I swear you were there with me. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. It was Fasso.
Oh, man.
That's all right.
That's got to hurt. That has got to hurt. Like, if it was me you were talking to, that would make a lot more sense. But I know often you say that your wife and I are the same person, but that's not true in this case. That's got to hurt. So what was going on in the world in 2006?
Yeah, well, this was the first big scary moment for it, wasn't it? In October of 2006 is when the UIGA was passed, literally in the middle of the night. It was, you know, tucked into the Safe Ports Bill that was almost essential, so people had to vote for it unless they really wanted to go out on a limb. And I remember when we heard about that the next day, or maybe the day after, when we started processing what it was. I think everybody was a little scared.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what does this mean? Is this going to, you know, we're not going to be playing online poker anymore? And, wow. That was a good run for the last three years or so that we've been playing. And I remember it was at the time, I'm like, I wasn't confident that things were going to work out with this, you know, with poker. I really did think this was going to be the end of it. And that's when I decided to get my season tickets to Clearwater Threshers, the baseball team.
I remember that, yep.
And like, you know, hey, if I'm not going to be able to play online poker, I'm going to have to do something, I'm going to have another hobby. I'm going to have to fill out time somehow. I'm just not going to sit there and stare at the screen, right?
Yep.
And I did that, and that was one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life. My entire office here is filled with Threshers stuff now. I've been a season ticket holder ever since the 2007 season now, so that's been And we've made so many friends there. It ended up being, you know, a big, hey, let's all go to the Threshers tonight. We do that every year, or a couple games. And it's been a big part of my life, and that was all because of George Bush.
Yeah, yeah. I remember.
Unfortunately, the UIGA didn't mean anything at that point.
But. And what you said, too, is the uncertainty of it. I do remember it just, there was a lot of confusion. And even today, people still don't really understand what the UIGA is.
Absolutely.
They say, you know, we get stories from our writers for the magazine. They'll say, you know, making it legal to play. And we have to always change it to regulating. Because it's never really been illegal for us to play poker online. It's just been illegal for the transactions between the banks and the. And it's like, it's just so convoluted and stupid, you know, that we were just dumbfounded when it first came out. And then it was that really created all the confusion. And now, you know, then we realized as it went on, we're like, okay, it really isn't going to affect us because these guys aren't going anywhere and we're still playing online. Yeah. So, but it still was always in the back of your mind that was there and something could happen someday, sort of a foreshadow.
They could take our virtual poker chips when they pry them from our cold, dead hand. But, you know, and that was a kick in the gut just for government fans. I mean, I'm a government nerd, right? You know, yeah. Grew up in civics class and how to make a bill and all that kind of stuff. And then you see the absolute worst that government can be. At that point.
Yeah.
So you had that, like, how can this happen? How can they just throw something in a bill and no one knows about it and has to vote for it in the middle of the night? And it's just not the way it's supposed to work, right? It's supposed to go from here to here to here to here. And it didn't. And so that was a kick in the gut. And then also just wondering what's going to happen. And then, as you said, we just kept playing and turned out to be more bark than bite at that point.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Wasn't all that big of a deal. I think we had to switch to from to NetTeller. Maybe was that when we started using NetTeller instead of something else?
Yeah, I think that NetTeller thing was a little after that. Then you got your money back, but you had to wait a while to get. I had like $100 in there or something, and I got it back. But yeah, NetTeller. Yep, got. And then they started coming up with all these other ways to do it, like credit card or whatever, those kind of cards that you get from a gas station or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
It was really just a bizarre time for getting money online. And if you had money online, you were fine, but getting it out too wasn't that easy either. They send you, I remember getting the checks in the mail,
right?
It's so bizarre. You're getting checks in the mail from, you know, Stars or Full Tilt or whatever. It was crazy. Just crazy.
Well, then 2007, they actually, the Times actually built a studio, a professional studio for us. I'm still shocked about this to this day because, one, the Times does almost nothing until 20 years after the rest of the world has.
Right.
And that was a big deal. And they came out, hey, we're going to build a studio. I'm like, really? I mean, I was ecstatic. It was awesome. But I'm like, it doesn't really seem like this is a good expenditure for the newspaper. Because at that point, there were three podcasts. There was us and the Stuck in the 80s guys and that sports one, right?
Yeah, and you know what, too, is they never really tied any revenue to it. And no, so that was really confused us. I'm like, all right, they're going to start selling like commercials, and we're gonna be valuable to the Times now. We're going to have to be able to make some decisions. But they never actually tied any money to it or anything.
No.
So that's what was confusing about why they make the studio. Yeah, okay, so I guess they were embracing digital somehow with the you know, and then they did voiceovers but you didn't need a studio for half the stuff that they were doing for the web anyway. They could have had just a quiet office. So yeah, it really did perplex us.
Take the ding out of the elevator.
Yeah, exactly. Disconnect the bell and you're good to go.
But that being said, it was a really nice studio. We really enjoyed it and nice equipment. And then we had our regular engineers now, you know, rather than where we could pull in to record the show for us. That was great. And, you know, and then so at that point, we started taking the show a little bit more seriously, I think. I mean, our little numbered list became bigger every show. We were at the 14 topics, maybe.
Yes.
Every order, and started lining up guests and stuff. And, you know, now I know that we didn't talk about inviting guests to be on the show today, Chris.
Right.
So, but I hope you don't mind. I did invite someone.
Okay.
And let me have them introduce themselves.
I knew you were going to bring the bell back. I was wondering if I was going to have to bring it up or not in 2007. I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh my God, he didn't write it on here. He didn't write about the bell. I'm going to have to say something. Hope I don't forget. then you play. So is that the actual bell, or is that
this
your
is
own
the
bell?
Actual bell.
Wow, you have so the actual
it's,
bell.
It's been in my by one of my drawers in my office here, and I see it every once in a while. You know, when I'm digging through for business cards or stamps or whatever is in there, and it always makes me feel good because on the outside it has scribbled on it Annie Up.
Wow.
And we bought that as a joke because now we're in the studio, we're in a like, soundproof room, and there's no way we're going to hear a bell anywhere. You know,
yeah,
no more
digging.
Elevator, no more microwave. You know, somebody could bring their reindeer through the office, and we still wouldn't hear the bell ringing on it. And so I went out to Office Depot, and I bought us a little $5, you know, bell to noise the hell out of people at the front desk. And then we just dinged it like forever at the studio, right? And then we eventually retired it when we left the studio. But,
yeah.
But I've always held on to it, so it's the actual one still here, and it was nice to bring it out. So
one of the things I remember, too, about I think it was right around that time when we started to introduce the Scott Long Dictionary.
Yes.
And you would come up with a ton of you'd make up these words that no one, like, what are you talking about? And for the longest time, it was like a running gag. We've gotten away from it, but every once in a while, you'll say something, and I might, under my breath, say another one for the dictionary or something. But yeah, that was one of the things, too. I remember being in that studio and coming up with the Scott Long Dictionary. Like bowl. Remember how bowl and bull?
Bowl and bull, right?
Yeah, but there were some actual words, too, that you, like, invented in your au juice. You had no idea that it was au jus. You had no idea. It was so precious. And I know I should
still use that one.
And the guys like are getting on me now on the poker radius for saying cute on the show. So now I've progressed to precious. So now I'm going to say precious from now on when I want to say something.
Oh, man. You're so precious.
I am precious.
And Deutsche Bank?
And Deutsche Bank, that's right. Yeah. There were a bunch of terms that you had come up with and coined, really.
And I still kind of use Deutsche Bank in regular life now. People are like, well, what are you?
They're like, what are you talking about?
You're anti-Nazi or something? I'm like, no, you don't understand.
Isn't everyone?
Yeah, I am anti-Nazi.
Isn't everyone anti-Nazi, I hope?
But that's not why I'm saying it.
I think we need a laugh track. Don't we need a laugh track? Sounds like we after 10 years we need a laugh track now. Like,
yeah, I was assuming people were laughing.
I hope so.
Time, right?
I hope so.
But that was the year we went out and played it in the World Series with Fasto, I think, right?
That's correct.
You know, I thought it was 2006, but when I was doing some research, that's when I realized this was the same year that we heard the name Lee Childs.
Yep.
He was a listener. He made the final table of the main event, and I remember we were on the show going, none of our Andy Uppers made the final table, ha, 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 ha. And then we get an email from Jenny Childs, that's not quite correct. We're like, what part of that? It's like, my husband's been listening to your show forever. He loves you, and he's at the final table. We're like, what? And so I'm like, yeah. So that was definitely the year we were out there because that was also Annie Up for Africa.
Yes.
We were on the red carpet there with Annie Duke and Don Cheadle, and we weren't on the red carpet. We were like, you know.
Well, we were on the edge of the red carpet. I talked
to
Matt Damon.
On the side of the red. Right, exactly, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, we were on it. I mean, I put my foot on it. I mean, I don't know that. And then I interviewed Matt Damon and asked him that awesome question I lined
That's
up
right.
for him, and he thought that was really good. And then we talked to Jason Alexander, who now I realize later on in life is an ass, but back then, you know, I was like, oh my, hey, that's George, man. We got to talk to him. You're Costanza. I'm Costanza. We got to talk. I still got a photo of him in my phone that I use for one of my friend's calls because he's like a huge Seinfeld fan. So whenever he calls, his photo comes up on my phone. And, yeah, we interviewed, like, everybody. Did we interview Tyson? We interviewed Mike Tyson, too, right?
Oh, yes. That's
yeah.
right, yes.
Yeah. So that was a really big year for us. We played in the actual World Series, too. It wasn't the main event, but we played. And
we played.
And that came up. That was the year I had the – they took all my chips, and the guy told me I was SOL.
Yep.
And I was like, SOL, and I held up the World Series for 20 minutes.
Stop the tournament, buddy.
There's my story. I'm sticking to it.
And what I love about this is that we're now what people believe these big poker media moguls.
Yeah.
They only really knew, right? And they're like, yeah, so how many times you played the main event, Scott? I'm like, main event? I played one World Series event in my entire life. $1,000 buy-in that lasted four levels, and that's it. I'm like, what? Yeah, sorry, just not there yet. But it was a thrill back then to play that. That was, wow, 8 years ago we played the World Series.
Yeah, that was I played the $1,500 no limit event, and I was like, that's now when I think back, you know, and I'm like, now I'm, you know, the publisher of a magazine, blah, 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 and now I would never spend $1,500 on an event. But back then I did. I'm like, what were you thinking?
No, it was a big deal for us. It was a bucket list kind of thing. I remember still counting out those $1,000 bills because my event's $20,000. Woohoo! And I'm like, wow, I've bought cars for less than this.
I know.
It's a tournament.
I know it.
And then I also remember, I was thinking about this last week when I was out in Vegas and when I went to the Rio and walked through the, I think it was the Amazon room. And I went back to the table where I thought my first table was going to be, right? Because you make a big deal. You put $1,000 down for a tournament. You know, I got there the day before that tournament back then and figured out where my seat was and visualized it. And you go to bed at night and you're like, all right, you know, we do all that kind of stuff that these visual coaches tell you to do. Get in the right frame of mind, right?
Right.
Showed up that morning. I sat down and went to sit down, and there was a cash game going on at my table. What's going on here? I'm supposed to be playing the shoe event. It's $1,000. It's like my entire life right here. There was like, oh, no, this is the wrong table, 178. You got to go to the green table, 178. And I'm like, oh, where's that? And this was the year when they had the big top.
Yeah,
right?
The big top
tent. Big top?
Yep.
And so here I am, like 20 minutes or 15 minutes before my tournament, having no idea where my seat is, table running through there, and then ended up, I'm out in that microwave that they call a tournament area, and it just threw me all off.
It was hot out there, even though they had like the fake air conditioning vents blowing into that hot top. It was still hot out there. You came in though, right? You eventually you worked your way in. And then you were playing with MIT guy, right?
I stayed at the big top the entire time.
Oh, I thought you did get
in. I walked over, and you and Fassel were still sitting there watching us, which is more than I did for you, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
And, man, I remember they're like, oh, man, what do you want to do, Scott? I'm like, let's play some cards. And we went and, I don't know, played poker somewhere or games or somewhere.
Yeah.
I remember you were
seated with the MIT guy. The guy who was the head of the MIT blackjack, the whole thing. The guy that
I knew who he was, but Fassel was like geeking out.
Yeah, that was who it was, and it was the movie that was based on him, Mr. M or Dr. M or Professor M or whatever they called him.
Last time I was seated at a table with a big person that I had no idea. I mean, last year at the Gold Nugget, which it wasn't an Antiope event, but I played with Yolan Schwartz for forever.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No idea who he was. And I was talking to him. I'm like, where do you live? Texas? Oh, yeah. And then somebody came over and was like, hey, what's it like playing with Yolan Schwartz? I'm like, I don't know. What you know what I do? He's like, he's right there. I'm like, oh, sorry.
That happens. What are you going to do?
But yeah, we didn't actually get to meet Lee that time, but he went on to become one of our most popular guests on the show, or most popular magazine columnist, was a cruise pro and good friend, and all because of the show.
Yep,
got listening to it and got lucky and got that one break that we're all hoping we all get sometime.
I still remember that phone call. I remember him calling me in the office. I was at the TBT office because I told Jenny, tell him to call me. We'll line up having him on the show, and he called, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, good luck, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, when he finished seventh, he called in and did the show with us. And that was when we were in the studio. So we did the whole phone call. Like, I think that was like one of our first.
Might have been our first call-in.
First call-in, yeah, for the guests. So that was really pretty wild, pretty landmark right there.
And, you know, as we talk about what's going on in the poker world through this whole thing, a lot of it comes back to online, and it's because, you know, most of our listeners were online players, right?
That's right. That's how they found us.
Still would be if they could, if it was easier for them to do it. So this was the year that the absolute ultimate bet cheating scandals
came out and
threatened to upend the poker world. We just got through this whole UIGA where we all... And then all of a sudden now some people are using whole cards or looking at whole cards. And, you know, I think that's probably back when we first started calling it the Wild Wild West, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was not a good time, though, because then you had to wonder. And every time that was right around the time, too, when we had the blog going, right? Because we used to have that blog. We'd post a recap on the blog, and we'd get all kinds of hits. And then I would try to come up with a topic or two that would spark people to come on, and that would... Everybody at the Times would get happy that we were getting all these hits and all these whatever. So, you know, that was when you were always wondering, you know, is online poker rigged? And, you know, because all of a sudden the one outer comes and you're like, see, this is it's not right. I don't care what this random card generated crap. And then we'd get into that and then we were convinced, not you, me, I was, you weren't. But, you know, I was like, this is not, something's wrong here. You know, how can this possibly keep happening? And now there's people cheating, so it only, you know, solidified what you thought, what, you know, your irrational thoughts, because you whenever you lose money and you're not supposed to lose money, you know, irrational thoughts creep in as to how did I lose that money? You know, and then when you find out there's these guys who could see your hold cards and these other sites, you start to wonder what's going on, and then you started to lose faith in it, and it was pretty daunting when that happened.
Yeah, it's really awesome to look back, 8 years ago and think about how our lives were then and how they are now. And it's absolutely terrible to think back 8 years ago to this scandal starting and knowing that eventually it was going to result in us wasting an hour and a half watching Runner Runner.
Yeah, I know.
We thought the worst of it was over back then when the ultimate bet and absolute shut down. But no, no! Justin Timberlake and Ben Affleck had to come back.
Oh, man. That movie was on TV the other day, and I thought, it's already on TV. That's how bad that movie was. It's on, like, Lifetime. I'm like, that's how you know your movie's really bad, when less than a year, you're on Lifetime after theatrical release, or whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, that was a brutal time, because then you didn't know, you know, that you knew that was going to be sort of the domino that started. You know, you felt like that this is going to all cave in on us. And it took a few years, but it did. It really did. And that had to raise up a lot of eyebrows when they found that out. And that's
probably sparked a lot of interest. You have to wonder now, without those cheating scandals, whether the whole Black Friday, which we'll talk about here in a couple years, on the show.
That's true.
whether that would have happened if it hadn't been for these high-profile scandals, right? Yeah. Because, you know, at that point, I think people knew online poker was going on, but no one really paid attention to it. And then all of a sudden, this happened, and then 60 Minutes is doing an expose on it, and New York Times, and, you know, places that normal people don't normally see online poker, right? And now all of a sudden it's in the consciousness. So I wonder if that was part of the kickstart to eventually what brought the hammer down on us. I guess we'll never know. But looking back now, you really have to wonder, right?
Yeah, that was probably the beginning of the end. Well, not really the end, but the denouement.
Well, the next period was 2008 to 10. For those of you that were worried we're going to go through 10 actual years, that's all right. You don't have to cancel your lunch apartment today. Well, it'll be fine. But so 2008-10, these are the pivotal years in ANTIUP history, weren't they?
No, absolutely.
We celebrated our 100th show with an epic marathon of clips and thank yous, and I believe that show was still being recorded, right? It was that long?
Yeah, but our 100th show was like...
it was like 3 hours and something.
Our 100th show, though, was that... Are you talking about the one where... That was like 2007 or something, wasn't it, though?
Right. It was right after this.
So. Oh, okay, because I was going to say, we did 50 a year, essentially.
Right.
Okay, yeah, so it was right after that. We have to do in that. Okay, I just want to make sure I knew what we're talking about.
Yeah. And actually, a little-known fact that I did... Actually, no, probably not a little-known fact, but I actually didn't know this until this week, you know, when I posted my thing on Facebook. You know, we had this great trophy that I believe Tom Pizza Boy Turley was the instigator on getting created for us, right?
Right.
Someone posted, oh, yeah, I remember that. After that 100th show, I donated Full Tilt money to get you that trophy. So it never occurred to me that they were collecting money through Full Tilt.
yeah. And then Gambit showed up at my house with it. And he's like, here you go. And I'm like, what's this? And he's like, just open it. And I opened it up, and it was one of those beautiful, clear, you know, like crystal eye type engraved, and it had our logo and everything on it.
Yeah, it's on top of my desk right now. It's very nice.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But so after that was kind of what, you and I sat around like, gosh, there is something here.
Yeah.
You know, if we got listeners in, it was, 35, 38 countries when we quit counting, every state in the nation, tons of emails and blog hits, and now they're actually, you know, picking up passing a collection plate to get into a trophy to commemorate.
You know,
there's something here, right? We got to make something out of this. And so we really pushed the Times to give us some more resources. And I think we were honest. We're like, we don't know what's here, but we just know something's here. Give us a little bit more time, some more resources, and let's find out what we could do to make the company some money off of this. And ultimately they said, sorry, don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we weren't even asking for much. We basically were just saying, hey, sell some commercials or something, make some money. So, and then once you see that it can do something for you, it can make revenue, then you might be more willing. No, they couldn't do it. They couldn't wrap their head. Even today, even with you dealing with the ad people that we talked to now, they still can't wrap their head around this show sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Some can. Some figure it out, different, whether it's a different topic maybe. Maybe it's the poker that throws people for a loop. But Yeah, they just the salespeople there. I think we had a Beau Rivage commercial, and we had Derby Lane for a little while.
Yeah, remember we had the Derby Lane commercial for $50.
Yeah, $50.
And we were like, wow, that's how much we're valued.
Yeah, $50.
A couple hours a week, so we can make the company $50.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. But yeah, they didn't see what we saw.
And ultimately, it was great because we kind of got ticked off and said, "Hey, we got to go have our own," and had no idea how to do it. And then we came up with the idea to start Andy Up Florida's Poker Magazine, which is something we knew we could make some money off of.
Right.
And we spent the next year, as I put in the notes here, I will go blue, scared as shit.
we were using our own money, didn't get loans or anything, used our own money, and basically talked to as many poker people we knew in the state, saying, "Hey, if we start this magazine, will you carry it and will you advertise in it?" And then we got a lot of yeses. And then after we started the magazine, they're like, "Well," and I'm like, "What?" And we were freaking out. We didn't know what to do.
We quit our jobs over this.
The Times was cool, though. I mean, they let us keep our show.
Yeah, they're real cool in letting us go. And really, I can't tell you how many people I've thanked there over the years. I'm like, I've never been happier than someone not believed in me.
Yeah.
Because we would never have taken this company where we have under that, you know, the corporate red tape there.
Yeah, no way.
It certainly would have been safer. We would have been able to sleep the entire last half of the year 2008, which I certainly didn't. I don't think you did either.
Yeah.
As scary as it was trying to figure out how to make this whole thing work. But yeah, it's clear they probably made a mistake letting us go, and it's clear that we're happy that they did.
I imagine if our poker magazine was being run by them now, if they had just said, "Hey, why don't you let us publish your magazine? You guys take over the magazine, you run it, it's your publication, blah blah blah." You know, who knows what they would have done to us 7 years later?
Oh,
you know, who knows what they would have? You know, they would have started making the same demands they're making of us when we were just working within the regular newsroom, and so we're fortunate, but. Think about how much money they would have made had they been running Annie Up, the magazine.
Oh, yeah. All the resources they had. I mean, we had to do everything from scratch.
Yep.
You know, you and I did almost everything for the first year until we finally started, you know, finding some folks that were willing to write for us and sell ads for us. But we were doing everything.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have to, if we could just focus on the product and let, you know, professional ad people sell the ads and the professional printing people do the printing and all that, I mean, wow. I think about that often.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be a lot of money for a newspaper that needs a little money. But whatever. So it worked out for us. And of course, now we couldn't use the studio there. So we worked out a deal with the WDAE over in Tampa and started recording at the studios there. And then the following year, we started Annie and Poker Cruises.
Yep. 2009.
Crazy.
And I remember... the sports animal. We would see a lot of celebrities there when we were there. Every once in a while, there'd be a celebrity there getting interviewed.
Yeah,
and it was pretty cool. They actually were considering giving us our own show there.
Right, yeah. They wanted to be like, 6 a.m. on
like
Sunday morning?
Yeah, so we had to get up at 5 a.m. on a Sunday. I'm like, yeah, that's not happening, guys. Sorry. Oh, come on, we could sell it.
We're going to start somewhere. And I'm like, yeah, I understand that. I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying I don't know how many poker players are up at 6 a.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah. And
if you're lucky, you might catch a couple that are still up from Saturday.
That's right.
But I promise you, there's no poker player in history that sets his alarm at 5 a.m. to get up to listen to a radio show. So,
no way.
But yeah, they were good partners there, letting us use that studio. Because that was kind of part of the scary thing, all this other stuff. I mean, we're worried about how we're going to make money and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think that was kind of important to us at that point that we didn't give up on the show then. We could have given up, but we could have said, "Hey, folks, sorry, we've got to focus on the magazine and make money, and the show isn't going to make money for us, and we'll get back to it at some point." But we didn't. And we didn't know where we were going to do it. And we actually recorded a couple. Remember the first couple episodes on our own were in your spare bedroom?
Right, our spare. And then we did some of yours, too. We kind of rotated
or something, right?
Yep. We had to get rid of the hollow sound. We had the little digital recorder. That was it. It was a little silver thing holding it in my hand. And then we went to your house. Remember you had the big stools and we had the table. They were the tall, tall breakfast stools.
Yeah,
and we had the table in front of us. And then Yep, there was a lot of stuff we did, you know, to try to fill in the gaps, you know, sort of jerry-rigged it or whatever, until we got to the deal with WDAE. So it was a struggle. I mean, it was pretty typical of what, you know, how a company starts out from scratch. You know, a lot of you talk about Apple doing their stuff in the garage, and you know, I'm not comparing this to Apple, obviously, but I'm just saying two guys getting together to start a company, and they start in a garage. You and I started in my spare bedroom. So, I mean, that sounds funny. That sounds funny when you say it that way.
But I'll tell you, back then, you know, I already talked about how little we slept and how scared we were, and I don't think anybody will ever realize how scary that first half year, at least, if not the whole first year, was.
Yeah.
When we just really didn't know whether it was going to make it or not. And so, for me, the show was always very cathartic, because that was the, no matter what the stress was during the week, and there was a ton of stress for the rest of the week, that hour where we sat there and just talked to our fans was like the best hour of every week for me. That was like, you know, hey, there's no stress here, and we can say what we want, we can screw up, I can mangle words, and no one cares. In fact, actually, they like it.
Yeah.
And so for this 1 hour, we have fans, and I don't have to worry about anything. And that really did help me get through that, those tough 6, 7, 8 months, whatever it was, at the beginning, knowing that every week that we had our fans that were looking forward to hearing us rap about poker.
Yeah, that and Poker Stars. Those two things. Without those two things, I don't know if we would have made it to 2009. You know, Poker Stars really saved the magazine. And when they were sponsoring the show and the double spread in the front, I mean, that money paid for the magazine, essentially, and then allowed us to anything after that was gravy. Yeah.
That was a big deal. If we didn't get that ad, we wouldn't have been there. So.
Yeah. I mean, today, that ad wouldn't pay for the magazine anymore, because the magazine's so much bigger and our finances are so much larger. But back then, that was it. That saved us. We would have gone maybe 2-3 issues and been out of money.
Yep, easily. So, yeah.
But yeah, the show was like the one thing that settled us down every week.
So our worldview back then was focused more on Florida, because we were Florida's poker magazine, and this was back when Florida was coming into its own in the poker world, and we were coming into our own as a magazine. I mean, we always thought that we thought we could make this work, because at that point there were 30-some poker rooms in Florida. Not that anybody really knew it, because they were, you know, $2 bet limits and $40 tournaments was all they could have back then, right? So Card Player, Bluff, you know, ignored it. Pretty much the rest of the world ignored it, too. But these rooms were big and packed every day.
Right.
I used to go as much as I could and play the $2 limit poker. I mean, it was just fun to play live, and especially when they did the $40 tournaments. But so it's hard to think back that was packing rooms for years back here, $2 limit poker and $40 tournaments.
Yeah, I remember every Saturday morning I go down to Derby Lane and play the $45 weekly, and you had to stand in line down the stairs sometimes and hope you got a seat.
To get in,
You had to get in. I used to go down on a Friday and prepay just so I could play, and that was a $45 tournament, and it was like crazy. 200, 300 people in the tournament. Crazy.
Yeah, I did the same thing. That was my routine every weekend. On Saturday, I'd get up and I'd go to Tampa Bay Downs and would enter the $45 tournament. And it would start at noon is when the tournament would start. But at noon is when they did the national anthem on the horse track.
Yes.
And so we all had to stop and stand up and, you know, pay respects to the country, which was cool. And then as soon as the song ended, shove up and deal. And the whole room of people sit down and we play poker, and then I would bet on the horses. I knew what I was doing, but I was there. But yeah, that was my life for a while. And then eventually, as much as I hate our legislature here, the fits and starts, they've helped us out a little bit. They eventually allowed no limit to cash poker, but with the famous $100 max buy-in. So you could play 5-10 limit, 5-10 no limit poker here, but you can only buy in for 100 chips at a time.
Yeah, that got us some flack, too. That got us some flack. The first issue we ever put out, somebody writes into us and says, these idiots are playing 5-10 no limit hold'em with $100 buy-in.
Right.
And so the headline was, you know, are you're a donk for playing this. And we got crap for that from all kinds of managers saying, you're telling my players are idiots. Why would I put your magazine in our room? And I'm like, dope. That's when we realized, okay, we went from having a couple of bosses to having 31 bosses at the minimum. And I'm like, uh-oh, we got every poker room manager in the world is our boss now. We're screwed. We got to figure out how to do this. Because when we first started the magazine, I wanted to be snarky, and you wanted it to be professional.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, can we do both? And you're like, eh. So that headline was kind of it was like, you know, my way. And of course, it gave us a lot of crap. And I'm like, all right, I guess we're not going to be a snarky magazine then. You know,
so everybody wants to be snarky. Unfortunately, you can't make money doing snarky.
Well, TBT was snarky, and that was where I was coming from. That's what I'm saying. They made a ton of money with TBT.
That's true.
And so that's where I was coming from, thinking that's the way. Yeah. So,
apples and oranges.
Yeah, I know. But I thought, you know, it might translate poker. Because all the other poker magazines were, like, boring to me. You know, they're just dry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I thought, well, we'll do something snarky, and then that backfired. So we didn't do that.
And eventually, in 2010, the Florida legislature took the caps off of poker here, and Florida really became a huge hotbed of poker now when they could, you know, run WPT tournaments and HPT and any World Poker Series, Tour eventually. Yep. And you play big cash games here. And unfortunately, because of the no limit, it killed limit games here, in my opinion, forever. You can still find a couple of them somewhere, or obviously 2/4s everywhere, but I don't consider that a game.
Right.
So that was my big problem with it too. I mean, I still say when I travel and they're like, "Oh yeah, Florida's great. Why would you ever leave there?" And I'm like, "I'm a limit player. I can't find a game there."
So yeah.
I'm happy to playing. I mean, happy to playing 8/16 Omaha 8 right now. This is amazing for me. I wish I could play it every day in Florida, but you know, 30 some poker rooms there, and you can only find it in one or two. But
if you're lucky.
But yeah, Florida. It's kind of funny how Florida grew with us. I like to think that we kind of helped that a little bit, right?
Sure.
Being a Florida poker magazine.
Sure.
So Florida.
Absolutely. But, we opened up a lot of eyes.
Kind of interesting when you look back now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then 2011, the show had developed into an organized list of topics and segments. And I'll pause for laughter from our listeners. We embraced the future by recording it via Skype now. So we can record it. You know, now I travel all over the place and we can record it wherever. I don't have to worry about picking you up and driving over to WDAE and using our little guest pass and wait for the studio to be open and all that, right?
Yeah.
I fought you on this long and hard. I was like, you know, because we did a couple of them like that just out of necessity. And I'm like, I really think that the show needs to be in a professional studio. And you're like rolling your eyes. And I'm like, well, I really think we need to keep this WDAE relationship going. You never know where that's going to go. And you rolled your eyes. And eventually I'm like, you're right, Chris. This is ridiculous. We're wasting a lot of time and effort and gas. And then we could just do it on Skype. And fortunately, I don't think anybody really complained.
No. I mean, you hear a little bit of the clicking and stuff like that and whatever, but it's the content that they're tuning in for, not that it's coming to you live from WDAE and using these stupid voices. You know, I mean, they want to hear from us, and it's the home game feel of the show that they like the most about it. And that's what, you know, now it's like we're having a conversation. You know, I mean, it's, I don't know. And I agree. I think the fact that we had to, you know, basically just mooch off of the WDAE people every week. I felt like I was an intrusion to them, right. You know, and I'm like, we're mooching off of them. And I just, we tried a little bit too, where like we bought the mics and stuff so we could do the stuff for Windy City, the TV shows. We would record stuff there. We tried doing the show that way, but that was just a big pain because then I'd have to come home with it. And then, you know what I mean? I had to go to your house to do it and come back to my house. And it was just like, you know what? Why aren't we doing it on Skype? And it's not. It's not that much different. I mean, it's really.
Well,
the
funny thing now, again, this is another part. Looking back, you know, putting the show together. I mean, now, I mean, if you started a podcast, I mean, who wouldn't do Skype now?
That's just
everybody uses Skype for everything now. Right? It's so commonplace now that no one would say anything. So it kind of shows you how much that Skype's come in the last 4 years or so. That back then, we're like, oh, it's kind of new. I don't know if people really understand it. I'm a little worried about it. And you're like, shut up, Scott, do it.
Yeah.
And here we are 4 years later. I mean, I'd be like, come on, Chris, let's do Skype. you can go find something better than Skype to record the show on? Shut up. Right. So it's just kind of funny how quickly technology changes in just 4 years or so.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
But our online fan series, Apes, with its plastic banana prizes, was in full swing back then, up until April 15th, and that day arrived and ruined it all.
Yeah.
Black Friday was a dagger in the poker world's heart, but oddly proved to be a boon for Antia Magazine, because we had just expanded nationwide. And it actually turned out to be a really good thing. And, you know, I did, I think I mentioned this in the show, but I spoke to a college class last year, earlier this year somewhere, and I was kind of walking them through the history of this, and I told them about Black Friday and how, you know, we didn't have a lot of online advertising other than PokerStars, and most of our advertising was brick-and-mortar casinos. And our competitors had almost all online advertising and very little brick and mortar, right?
Yeah.
And when this happened, they had to scramble and try to repair some relationships. And we were like the guys just sitting there ready to benefit from what everybody hoped would be a big boon in live poker now that you couldn't play on online, right? And one of the guys in the audience said, hey, you're just kind of like Forrest Gump with the shrimp boats, right? And I'm like, you know what? I never thought about that, but that's the story I'm going to use from now on, because that was exactly it, right? Yeah. We just happened to be the little guys in the right place at the right time when the hurricane came, and we got all the shrimp, or at least a good amount of it, and haven't turned back. So that was a really cruddy day for poker, and certainly for those of us like to play online, but it actually ended up being a pretty positive development in our careers here.
But would you change it, though, if you could? Would you say, all right, we did get that sort of benefit of being the magazine that was already having great relationships with these people and giving them the love that they needed? Or would you say, right, well, we could get 10 online rooms to advertise in the magazine and we could still work on those relationships and, you know, not have to go through that? That was a brutal time for us, too. I mean, it ended up being a boom, but it was brutal. Right. We were really worried. Yeah.
Well, it was tough establishing ourselves, new place. I mean, people, not only because it's kind of weird because, you know, you kind of struggle as a startup to have people even believe that you can put out a magazine the next issue.
Right.
You know, and at that point, we've been putting out a magazine for 3 years. So, I mean, we could show people we could put out a magazine. The problem was that we had this stench of Florida on us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Around the rest of the country, they're like, "Oh, all your news is Florida. Well, all you do is Florida. I don't know why I want to put my ad in a Florida magazine." We're like, "Well, it's not now. It's a nationwide magazine." And at the same time, we have our Florida people like, "Hey, wait a minute, what happened to our Florida magazine? Now you're covering Vegas and California. Other people already do that."
Yeah.
Like, so we were like, you know, getting burned on both ends of the wick, right?
Yeah, it was tough.
That was difficult. I will say, I hate when people say, oh, I have no regrets, because that's BS, right? We all have regrets, right? But I have few regrets about how this all came down. I actually think it all worked out well for us. And then even online, I mean, we'll talk about, you know, Black Friday and what that meant for the poker world here in a minute. But I think about this often now, especially, you know, I was out in Vegas this last time and I watched one of my friends that lives out there, he multi-tables on WSOP.com all day long because he can't, because it's regulated there, right?
Right.
And I was just watching him, and when I walked in the apartment, he had like 8 tables going on his laptop. He was watching UFC on the TV, and he had his tablet open and was shopping on Amazon. And I'm like, one, I'm impressed, because I couldn't do any one of those three things on their own, right? And he's doing all three, and doing all three of them well, by the way. But then it just, you know, it occurred to me, I'm like, you know, I spent a lot of time online playing online poker that I thought I was enjoying myself, and I don't think I was. Now, granted, I wish it was back, and because I loved Apes, I loved playing that, and I loved, you know, hey, at the end of the night, I just want to pop in a deuce to seven, sit and go or something. I miss all that. That I would love. But I think my life is richer now, not in a financial sense, but in a spiritual sense, for not having online poker readily available anymore.
Huh.
I think it's forcing me to, you know, maybe watch some different TV shows, you know, go do different concerts or things. I don't know. I've got a lot more activity in my life now than I think I would have, or certainly than I did back then, and more than I think I would have if Black Friday never happened and we were still playing Stars and Full Tilt and Joe's Poker and whatever else came up since then. So I wish it didn't happen, because I'm not a big fan of limiting freedom, and that still gets in my craw. But in a real life situation, it's hard for me to argue it was a bad thing.
Wow. So, but yeah, like, yeah, the Threshers games and that kind of thing, you're forcing yourself to go out and do more things. But, you know, from a poker player standpoint, you know, it's still nice to, like you said, be able to sit there in your pajamas and play.
I'm not trying to say that I support the fact that it's not there. I'm just being realistic now, looking back over the last couple of years.
Right, right.
Because I didn't have it available to me, I'm a better, I don't want to say a better person, that's the wrong thing to say, but I think my life has been more
diverse,
more variety in my
life
than I would have if, And that's kind of an interesting topic to have in general, that here in America we have so many freedoms, even though we're complaining about these ones that we don't have anymore, right?
Right.
And everybody seems to always think that that's great, and it is, you know. But there's times, like, you know, when you go to, I'm just going to pick a random one, like, you know, I bought my wife her car, you know, which is one of the great achievements of this company for me, is that I was able to buy her car, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to pick out a car, and there's like 100 colors, right? And I'm like, now I'm stressing over, what's dark side? I can't really tell online. Is it black? Is it? And really, it was too many choices. There's like 3 different colors of white, 3 different colors of black, and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. And it was stressing me out. And I'm like, you know what? If all they had was one color black, let's go all the way back to Henry Ford in 1908, right?
Right.
You can have any car in any color you want as long as it's black. People were happy, right? Then all of a sudden you gave them choices, and choices are always good, right? But sometimes it's too much. Sometimes you don't need all those choices. And so I guess that's kind of where I'm thinking, is that obviously I would love to have online poker back because I enjoyed it. It was a big part of my life. But when you have that, and then you've got all these other things you're doing, you have to make a choice. And I think a lot of people back then, including myself, chose just to stay home and play a tournament some night.
Right.
Instead of go out with a friend or whatever, you know?
Right. Yep. No, I got you.
So the fact that they limited freedom actually was liberating in a weird way.
That's ironic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Lars Morissette recorded a song about that. But yeah, so we've been talking about Black Friday, and obviously it essentially shut down online poker in the United States, and players on full tilt learned about what some called a Ponzi scheme among some owners, and their funds were tied up for years, literally for years.
Yeah.
Players who earned a living online so they could spend time at home with their families were forced to look for other employment or play live, and sponsorship dollars dry up, and that meant everything that they paid for dried up as well, too, including TV shows. And again, somehow we survived it because we were in a better spot for it. But certainly, I think I would say, aside from personally wanting to play online poker, even though I don't miss it as much as probably other people do, it's a different world now without that money that online poker provided. You know, we don't have any of these big poker training companies anymore. There's a lot less poker on TV, and you know, that's not a good thing for poker, right?
Right. No. No, it's the thing about Black Friday for me was I enjoyed playing the mixed games.
Right.
That, yeah. The only time I'm going to play them now is if the home game happens.
Right. Yeah.
And that's one, and I wasn't sure if we were going to squeeze these things in, but that's one of my favorite things about the show was, think about our home game now. Who's in our home game?
Yeah.
All fans of the show.
Yep.
You know, Gambit, Eric, Doc,
yep.
You know, Andrew and his wife. I mean, they know each other locally from the magazine too. But that was spawned from the show.
Right.
You know, the only person that isn't from the show really is Faso. After that, everybody in the home game essentially is from the show, and I think that's my favorite result, other than the fact that, you know, we have the magazine. But I mean, personally, not business wise. Personally, that home game is precious to me. I love that we get together and have a night out with the friends that, you know, we all have the same interest in, and that home game survived because of our show. I don't even think we'd have a home game if we didn't have the show anymore. You know what I mean? If that show never existed.
I'm sure it's true.
Yeah. We'd have no home game. So
plus, we've had a number of listeners that come to town and
they'll play in it
and say, hey, do you get a home game? We're like, yeah, we'll try to put one together. And so we've had a couple, you know, pop by and play. And of course, when I travel, I see, you know, fans everywhere. Actually, you know, I spent a couple hours with Lauren out in Vegas last week, and did Benihana, so, you know, it's become a big part of our lives, just the listeners. But you're right, yeah, the home game is.
But I miss the mixed games because of that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, I liked Apes and all that, but it was the variety that I got to play for real stakes, because, like you said, No Limit Hold'em crushed Limit here in Florida. Once they allowed it, there were no limit games. So even for just not just Limit Hold'em, but no one's playing stud, 5-10 stud anywhere. Very rarely especially you're not going to play stud 8, my favorite game, hardly ever. You know, so I mean, it's like, where am I going to play it? Well, I have to wait for the home game to play it now, and I only get to call it once every 6 time around if I want to call it, you know, or whatever. So I love just rolling out of bed and, hey, I'm going to play 4 cent, 8 cent, you know, and just not even think about it, but just enjoy schooling these guys and seeing how the cards unfold and everything. That's what I missed the most about online, was just being able to play those mixed games for small stakes, you know. You have to sweat it, you know, you just had fun. But I miss it.
Well, then 2002 to present.
2012.
Sorry. Right, 2012 right. Present. We expanded the show and then tightened it back up. You know, we got to the point where we were doing two and a half hours.
I know, it was crazy.
And it was tough to put together and find enough stuff, actually, really, to fill that much. And then you came with a great idea of tightening it up. And I think the show's been really good the way we do it now.
Yeah.
Of course, we got to welcome O'Malley on board to replace, you know, fill that gap when. The One Minute Mystery left us for a while, and he's been great to have. And we added a bunch of new sponsors for our fans to participate in our show segments. So now, you know, we're giving away prizes every week, and people kind of know what to expect now when they come on. You know, we have a style of doing the show. Of course, off topic this week, but and then of course these last couple of years we launched the Antioch Poker Tour. It's been a lot of fun and getting people out to play at those events, and I really enjoyed being out at the Gold Nugget the last couple of weeks, and look forward to going out next week. And shameless plug in the middle of our 10th anniversary, but antiochmagazine.com/goldnugget if you're looking to be out in Vegas next couple of weeks, come out and play. But that was the last big step in our company.
Right. Yeah, that's the last major thing we did. And it's exciting because people get to, you know, have a different type of tour. You know, it's not just the same tour that you see everywhere, just with a different logo on it. You know, our tour is catered toward the locals in that room, and people who hold them love them. They embrace, and the fact that they get to be on a magazine cover. I mean, what, you know what I mean? It's not very often you win a tournament, you're going to be on the cover of a magazine, guaranteed. But in ours, you win the main event, guaranteed, you're on the cover.
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess what I really like, one of our sales pitches has been, and I hate to call it a sales pitch because it's really an honest thing, but, you know, we can help you connect poker players wherever they are, whenever they are, whenever they're playing, wherever they're playing, and however they're playing. And that's really kind of, I think, where we started as this show, this audio show, right, with a blog. And, you know, now if, you know, you want to, you know, go on a cruise, hey, we got any poker cruise, you come on a cruise and play with us. If you want to, you know, play in a tour event in a live poker room, now we got the Anti Poker Tour, you can play there. And, if you need a magazine to figure out where to go play, we got a magazine for you, and all this other social networking, all this other stuff that we've grown into over these last 10 years has been really amazing. And hopefully we're connecting people. Literally, like I said, you know, whenever they want to play, wherever they want to play, and however they want to play.
And I guess that leads us up to the big thing. You know, obviously, poker had to evolve without online money. We have to wonder, going back to the first show ever, has poker plateaued now? And I think the answer that we have now is different than we had then. To me, it is. I think it has. I think it absolutely has. I mean, they're trying, and when you look at how many people entered the Colossus and all that, you're like, wow, how can you say it's plateau when there's 20,000 people entering this tournament? Yeah. But again, that's one thing, one event, and it catered to a specific buy-in for, you know, and they could fund it with the online poker they had in Vegas. And it's like here, we didn't have that opportunity. And if you look at where the TV shows are gone, the online poker essentially is gone. There are still some sites that are surviving, but it's essentially gone. The magazines, how many are left that are actually printing magazines? Three, right? Yeah. All In, which you never know when they're going to publish, Card Player, and Us. So think of all the ones that shut down since we. So to say that it hasn't plateaued would be dishonest.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was the same argument we made back then, that it's plateau, but it is, the plateau's higher than it was before.
Right. So, it was still climbing, but now it's plateauing again up at that level.
So this plateau is higher than the last plateau that we talked about, so that's we can celebrate that. But yeah, it's really tough to see right now where that next growth spurt's going to be. I mean, there's some positive moments, you know. Obviously, we have online poker in Nevada and Delaware and New Jersey. Lots of other states, including California, are talking about it. So there's some hope there that eventually that's going to happen and grow it up. You know, of course, we talk about Alex Dreyfus a lot and his Global Poker Index and all the things he's trying to do to get poker sportified now in the mainstream. And if he ends up being successful, that should help a little bit. But really, those are the only two growth things that we're seeing now. And hopefully there'll be something else that comes along that raises the ship up a little higher, and we have another mini boom. You know, as obviously as we mentioned back on that very first show, there's never going to be another moneymaker boom again. That was just
right. Yeah.
The confluence of the TV and the lipstick cameras, and then his amazing run is just, you know.
Yeah, that's once in a lifetime. And
again, right?
I do think the online thing will help a mini boom if that ever comes. Because once you make it federally regulated and people aren't going to be scared anymore, that's going to bring in a lot of money into the economy. And then when that happens, online will dump a lot of their money into advertising. And then all of a sudden it's going to be in the consciousness again. And TV, it's going to be, you know, TV shows and TV commercials and... You know, and then I think that will do it. I do think that'll be the next boom. But then after that, I don't know if it has happened. I mean, but other than that, right. I don't know what the next thing could be.
And the online thing's important, you know, because back around Black Friday, you know, everybody thought that, you know, hey, as soon as people are just going to flood live poker rooms now, right, because that's the only place they can play, right?
Yeah.
And there was a bump, obviously. But it wasn't as big as I think a lot of people thought.
Right.
And part of the reason was because, you know, some people just preferred not to play live. You know, they learned to play online poker. Now online poker's gone. It's not that they love poker. They loved online poker.
Yeah.
And so they left the game altogether. And then you had a big segment of people that liked playing for pennies. You know, one penny, two penny limit poker. And that was the way they, you know, spent their night. And you can't go in a poker room and play for anything less than a dollar now.
Right.
Really, that's even harder. So 2-4. And that's a big jump if you're used to playing 1 cent, 2 cents. So those players disappeared. And so if you bring online back, that's going to be the way to get people in. Because there's still a ton of people, let's be honest, there's still a ton of people that when you tell them, hey, I'm a poker magnate, well, I don't want to play poker against you. You must be really good. Well, really, I'm not.
Yeah.
but no, you're going to shark me out of all my money. And that's still the fear, right, is that you go into a poker room, even if you're playing 2-4 limit, that somebody's just going to shark you out of your money. So people don't want to do that. But if you can go online where it's anonymous and no one's making fun of you for, you know, raising out a turn or, you know, holding your cards up to your eyes when you're not supposed to, all kind of that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And be able to play at a level that you feel that is fun for you and not, you know, the rent money. That gets more people in. And that's really what we've been missing over the last couple of years is those people. There's no gateway to poker anymore that people find not intimidating,
right,
and not expensive.
And I'm glad you brought that up about the anonymity, because I was going to bring that up too. I mean, my wife's a good example. She loved playing Sit and Goes online because she didn't have to worry about feeling, you know, like not one of the boys or not, you know, not someone who was completely educated on the rules of live poker. Whereas online, it forced you to, you know, you knew when your time was to bet. You couldn't possibly make the mistake of betting out of order, or you couldn't possibly be looking at your cards. Someone can't see your whole cards, other than an ultimate bet. But
Hamilton. But other than that.
Yeah, but other than him. But, you know, so you're right. The anonymity was a huge thing. And now you're forcing them to get in the car and get gas in the car and go down there and then walk into the poker room and then figure all that out. And it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And I remember for a while, too, that the brick-and-mortar places were trying to duplicate that online experience. Remember, they had, like, the Rush Poker where not talking about the Rush Poker online. I'm talking about they actually had where you only had time limit to bet. Right. Some of these pokers were trying to do that, and they were trying to come up with different games, and you could play two hands at once. And they were all kind of these little quirky ways to say, hey, it's just like online poker. Come try it here. And, you know, that never worked out. It wasn't surprising that it didn't work out, but you had to try it to see. You never knew. And it's tough. It's a struggle to duplicate that. You just can't do it. So I think when it does come back, that money will flow back into the community again, and it'll be a boon.
Well, buddy, it's been a good 10 years.
It has. And cheers to 10 years. I had a shot glass when I turned 30. Somebody gave it to me. It says, cheers to 30 years. And I thought, wow, imagine if we did the show for 30 years. We'd be in our 60s.
First of all, somebody gave you a shot glass. They don't know you very well.
I know. They don't at all. It was 14 years ago. I'm like, okay, thanks for the shot glass. I know. It literally just collects dust next to my Sahara shot glass on the shelf. But, yeah, it was a great 10 years, and I'm very grateful that we sat down next to the Lean Cuisines and tried to put this together.
And I just want to, you know, close the show by just thanking everybody that's listened. I mean, it really has been amazing, the friends that we've met, and even my wife, who doesn't listen to the show and is not a big poker fan, but she knows who the listeners are, and you know, some of them come on our cruises and become her friends now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just amazing to think of how many people that we have come into our lives through the show, just the two of us yapping to each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's really weird doing the show. I don't think everybody really understands how weird it is to do the show when there's no one here. There's no, and we're not even in the same room together anymore. So it's not right. Even the two of us working off each other. It's really kind of, in a weird way, lonely to do the show. But then to see people react to it and or come up to you at an event, like, I listened to the show on the week. You guys, we listen to you at the home game, and it's great. And that means something. It's just really cool that for the last 10 years that we've been having that kind of effect on people, and those people are having the kind of effect they're having on us.
Oh, absolutely. It's so rewarding. I mean, there was that brief period where the magazine and the show was sponsored by PokerStars. But you take that brief period out, we're doing this because we love it. We don't make any money on this show. And no. It's because we love the community, and the rewarding aspect of it is just, it's so worth it. I still remember when we were touring the country together, trying to convince all these guys to carry the magazine and we advertise, and we're sitting in an elevator in Pittsburgh. No, not Pittsburgh. It was the what's the one where David Urey ran it?
Sands.
Yeah, Sands. We get out of the elevator into the parking garage, and all I said to you was something like, "Well, he was cool." Guy turns around as he's walking in the elevator, goes, "Hey, love your show." I'm like, he recognized us either by our faces, because we kind of have our faces in the magazine and stuff, but the magazine really hadn't been distributed in that area yet.
Right. Yep.
So, I mean, it was basically our voices. They recognized us by our voices, and they appreciated it to say that. You know, I mean, like I said in the beginning of the show, you could literally go a month and listen to our show without not listening, and it's for free. And I think that they rewarded us with their appreciation of it, and that's why we keep doing it, you know, 10 years. And, you know, as O'Malley said, you know, hope there's another 10 years, and so do I. I hope that there's that kind of give and take from the fans, and they supply a lot of our show, as you'll find out next week, you know, when you listen to the next episode. A lot of our shows, our content is driven by our fans, and we appreciate it. So it's sort of this mutual respect and give and take, and I totally appreciate everyone that listens to this show, especially when we meet them in person. It's so much fun.
Absolutely.
All right, buddy, to another 10 years. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.